Horrific Network Entertainment.
To all who come to this happy place, welcome.
Welcome. We have been expecting you.
My calculations are correct. You're gonna see some serious shit.
Okay, guys, coming up next is going to be a fun one. We have a really cool podcast, one of my favorites, especially around haunt season. Nobody really covers like Not Scary Farm podcasting-wise like Gabe and Nikki. A lot of podcasts, it seems like, always favor HHN and don't give the Knots or even the Six Flags like a fair chance at comparison. And these guys always do, so it is really fun to get their take on just the haunts in Southern California that aren't necessarily Halloween Horror Nights. But, guys, welcome. Thank you for being part of our halfway to Halloween event, man.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
No problem. Thank you for taking the time out. Like I was saying, like, you guys always do a good job of covering Knott's Berry Farm, like, specifically. It's always fun to, like, get your guys' take on the returning mazes, like, how they chose what they choose to, like, stick around, and then the new stuff that they brought in. Like, I know you guys and my buddy John really liked that Mesmer maze last year.
Yeah, Mesmer was super. Right?
So what is it about Knott's, man, that you guys enjoy?
Sure, I'll go.
For me, it's the fact that it's like a whole park vibe. It's not just, you don't just go there for the mazes. It's like, it's all around you all the time. You're literally like never safe. You know, you never know who's going to come around whatever corner, what's lurking in the fog. It's literally like you're always on alert. And I think that's what you want most when you go to one of these events. It just, it has its own special feeling that you just can't even describe.
Yeah, I definitely think that Scary Farm in and out of itself has such a, like you said, a very unique sense to it. And I think a lot of that love comes from the fact that, you know, I went a long time ago and it was my first haunt. And that was kind of the style of scare that really drew me into that haunt community and Halloween in general, you know. And that's not taking away from any other event, you know, Halloween Horror Nights or Fright Fest or, you know, Queen Mary, rest in peace.
Yeah.
stuff like that. It just, for me, it was the way that Knott's approached their haunt event. And like you kind of said as well, it made it very cohesive. So we absolutely love Knott's, and in our coverage, we try really hard to kind of give a sense of what it's like to be there, whether or not we're doing a podcast about it or we're doing a written article about it. Try very hard to talk about it so you can get a sense of that, but as well, talking about it in a way that is from the artistic standpoint of things too, because, you know, this stuff is essentially an art installation that's around for a month and a half.
It's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, actually. So you talk about it from the artistic standpoint of, you know, whether or not a maze had visual literacy enough to understand a story, or whether or not, you know, it was just, you know, gore fest, or if it was something that was trying to get a bigger point across, stuff like that. Yeah, so we always try our best, and I'm glad that it comes across that way.
Do you guys enjoy the shows, or do you miss the hanging that Knott's used to do? Because I remember the years, I haven't been to Knott's in a little while, but the last time that I went to Knott's, I think, was the last year that they did the hanging show. Yeah. I always thought the hanging show was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely miss the hanging. I understand why they didn't bring it back. You know, it's been around for quite a long time. It's the same shtick every time. I get that. I definitely miss it because there's a certain level of humor that works really, really well with the scares. It's in the way that I've always talked about it, and the way that, you know, I talk about it on our show, is that it's chocolate and peanut butter. You know, those, that combo works so well together, and the comedy and the horror works so well together. But thankfully, even though the Hanging isn't around, we do have other shows, and the other show that it kind of took its place in a way, even though it wasn't on the main stage out there in the thoroughfare, was Puppet Up. And I absolutely love Puppet Up and think it's a fantastic replacement as like the big show at Scary Farm. And I can't talk more good things about that show.
I personally think Puppet Up is a good Elvira replacement, but I really do miss The Hanging. And
fair enough.
I will be sad for a while that it's gone. And it was, for nothing else, also, it was a good recap of the year. Like, I would watch That's it. True. I'd yeah, watch it. And I'd be like, yeah, that happened in January. Like, so I just really loved it. It always made me laugh, and I always look forward to it. So I do miss it.
You know, I'm really surprised Puppet Up hasn't had an Elvira puppet yet.
Oh.
I'm really shocked they haven't done that yet. Like, that to me seems like the most obvious thing to do, and they haven't done it.
Maybe there's a logistical reason why not, but I would love to see that. Honestly, it's
probably just a copyright
yeah,
thing.
It's yeah, like,
can't copyright the boobs.
Yeah.
Did Elvira retire? Was that like official?
Yeah,
she did.
Like so across the board out of everything, she retired.
She's Cassandra Peterson everywhere. Not
Scary Farm anymore.
Yeah.
No, I don't think she's ever going to come back.
Wow, that's kind of like a big chunk missing then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Pump It Up is a good replacement.
It's though. A very good yeah. replacement. It's very well done. And the fact that each show is going to be different because inherently stand-up comedy and improv is always going to be different, it makes the repeatability great.
But you guys said Puppet Up was taking the replacement before Elvira leaving. You said Puppet Up was like the big replacement for, what was it?
The Hanging.
The Hanging, right. So
yeah, because they had Elvira with The Hanging, then Elvira ended, and then they had The Hanging end, and then Puppet Up came in.
Puppet Up was kind of a replacement for both of them.
Yeah, a little bit.
Did they both end the same year?
I don't think they ended the same year. That would be a little bit intense.
But you think Puppet Up is that good, though, that it like yeah. replaces both?
I definitely think it's a very, very good yeah. replacement. Wow. The amount of shows that they have every night and the repeatability of the show itself, I think yeah. it's a fantastic offering for them. I mean, that plus all the smaller things as well that kind of at least balance out the event as a whole.
Having not gone to Knott's in a while, but that's like one thing that my buddies always cover when they like cover it for our channel, as they say that like there are other small show offerings that are kind of around, kind of like Knott's on a normal day almost,
yeah,
which makes Knott's Scary Farm kind of cool, where you're not necessarily having to try to stage yourself and make it like a huge chunk of your time. The shows are just kind of constantly happening.
Yeah, that always is really helpful, because there's a lot of times where you just kind of come across certain things,
uh-huh.
and they do give the actors a lot of leeway too, so more often than not, you'll find the actors in different scare zones doing absolutely ridiculous nonsense
yeah.
that is just specific to that night, and I absolutely love that, actually, because it allows you kind of the opportunity to sit in a scare zone and appreciate it, as opposed to just quickly walking through it from one maze to another, like other haunt events. You know, I spent a lot of time in Carnival last year, and the amount of nonsense that I saw happening yeah. was absolutely amazing.
But and then there's also, like, last year they had the Goring 20s,
mm-hmm.
and they would have, like, a whole band. Like,
yeah, they would play the band up yeah, on the top by the Charles M. Schultz Theater. Mm-hmm.
So there's constantly entertainment value in the scare zones, a lot of them.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. like from top to bottom, in general, I feel like the value across the board at Knott's is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
So.
John and Ashley are two of my friends who design a haunted house where we are up here in Northern California. They're agreeing with you that they love Puppet Up as well. And they're asking you, obviously, Ghost Town Streets is always one of the best scare zones every year. However, was there any other scare zone that Knott's has done that surpassed Ghost Town any of the years that you have gone? Have you think, or thought, I should say, any scare zone not Ghost Town themed was the best scare zone at Scary Farm?
I'm going to make this really easy. No. I feel like Ghost Town is such an integral part of the identity of what Knott's Scary Farm actually is, that I don't think any other scare zone can top it. I do think that other scare zones bring their own sensibility and they bring their own identity to the table that makes a nice juxtaposition to Ghost Town, especially with like the arrival of Goring 20s, where it's more of like this party atmosphere, as it were.
Yeah.
But nothing really beats Ghost Town in the vibe that you get as soon as you enter the park, where you're face to face with the fog. You see all the monsters lurking in there. You know they can see you. You can't see them. And the music and everything else, I just don't really think that there's a single scare zone that can really top it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm like, I'm trying really hard to think through like all the scare zones that I can remember. And like there's just, it's going to be so hard to beat.
I know that people would argue and probably say the only other two scare zones that potentially could even get close, and this is before you, so you don't even have to worry, it's the Gauntlet or what was the name of the scare zone that was by Reflection Lake? There was another one right there. But those are the only other two scare zones that I could think that people would maybe argue are better. But as a whole, I don't think, you know, Carnival, Goring 20s, the Hollows, any of those really surpass Ghost Town in any way, shape, or form.
I think Carnival has its own charm, and it's, in a certain way, it's kind of like a staple at this point, you know, just like Ghost Town is, but it's different. It's wonderful, but it's different.
Yeah, each zone brings its own flavor. Yeah,
but no, Ghost Town is still our favorite, hands down.
It is interesting, too, because the years I've gone to Ghost Town, the amount of fog that they use and then not scare zones, like
it seems dangerous.
Yeah.
And it makes it feel like twice as long.
Yeah,
it really does.
Because HHN, I can remember early 2007, 2008, like they used to do that much fog.
Yeah.
Because there was a year where they did like the Strangers and it was dead quiet in one of the streets. And the Strangers were just in the fog and they would totally sneak up right behind you and just like be in your peripheral vision. It was super creepy.
That's definitely a direction that's not what you would be used to at all.
Yeah.
I think I would definitely be creeped out, especially because you're so used to environmental music and something kind of filling that space.
Do you know where that would be wonderful?
Where?
Hogsmeade.
Yes, with Death Eaters.
Dead quiet with Death Eaters in the nooks and crannies of the buildings. Oh my God, I just got so excited.
When you guys, because you guys are going to the Orlando HHN this year, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we have our vacation booked.
One of your times before you go to HHN, try to take like a little bit of time to go to Potter Hogsmeade in Islands of Adventure. If you haven't ever seen it, the Death Eaters come out and it's like the entire land flips. It's kind of cool.
What?
Like at night before it closes?
Yeah. They like shoot their spells and like the train station blows up and
what?
It's pretty cool.
That was a thing.
That's super cool. <They're>
I didn't think that they would like go into the stores. I was trying to get a picture of one and I was trying to like come around him to come up in front and he was following this girl and the girl went into the wand shop and I'm like, okay, he's going to turn around now. And no, he just like threw the door open and went to the wand shop. And I was like, dang.
That's so fantastic.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah, they need to do that here. They need to do that in Hollywood. That'd be so cool.
Yeah.
I don't get why they don't.
I know.
I think it's just a logistical thing when it comes to contracts and, you know, needing to get certain signatures down before, you know, doing those sorts of things. And I know that, you know, especially with last year and this year, it would make the most sense, especially because you have to walk through there in order to get to those mazes on behind Curious George parking structure. So having to walk through there, why not have a scare zone?
It would be cool.
Yeah, it would.
It'd be one of the few scare zones where you have to walk through it.
Yeah.
As opposed to go out of your way to go find it.
And it's like not super hard or anything. Like it's Death Eaters throwing spells. So you can make the argument that they don't like gore up Harry Potter or anything. Like,
I mean, I would love to see some dead characters. They just need
fog and Death Eaters. Keep it super simple. Like you said, no ambiance music, just like literally a quiet night in Hogsmeade. Like, It'd be so cool. Yes.
The only we're getting off topic, but the only reason why I think there would need to be music is because typically that scare zone on the main thoroughfare is
really
so loud, and it has so much like hardcore like Rob Zombie music that you would hear that.
Okay, then they can just have wind noise.
The music.
Wind noise. No, loud wind noise.
Loud wind noise. Yes. That's okay. Sure.
I'm just talking about like natural, a natural sound. Never mind. Well, let's stop talking about that.
This is what the podcast is like, people.
The so you've been going to Scary Farm 2007, you said, was your first year?
Yeah, that was my first year. What was your first year?
2012, 2013.
Yeah, 2012, 2013. Yeah. I introduced her to Scary Farm.
Yes, because, he does me for my very first time.
Yeah, because you were a HHN person before that. What person, in quotation. That's what you would
the
go
The first
to.
Year I went to HHN was 2012.
You were an HHN person before that.
For 1 year. For 1 year. Technically.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, did you, Gabe, go in the stepfather attraction at Knott's Berry Farm?
I did.
Okay.
It was very bad.
What was your group and or your specifically, what was your reaction to the stepfather attraction?
I mean, we went in thinking that it was going to be something like really cool. Because obviously it's a movie tie-in where, and by the way, just so you have context, it wasn't a full maze. It was literally like a gigantic box.
Okay.
Like imagine a key room.
A key room, yeah.
But then the stepfather movie.
Okay.
So like certain lights turned on with cues from the trailer and like that was it. Like that was literally it. And I think we left, we're like, that was really dumb. That was really dumb.
The table saw like swung above you or whatever.
Yeah, there was some weird like little like things that happened in there, but like nothing that was outstanding in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
In the slightest.
I don't know if that actually counts, but Ashley actually asked, what was the worst maze that Knott's had ever done? In your opinion, the worst one.
I think you and I are going to agree on this probably.
Probably.
Dead of Winter. The one that was all snow and it was like super
bright. Oh, yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah, so Dead of Winter was
a maze. It was like frozen.
Yeah, so it was a maze that is where Dark Ride is now. And the whole concept was like, oh, mazes don't have to be dark to be scary. So it was a little bit brighter. It had a lot of snow and ice and things like that. So a lot of things were white.
It was nice on hot nights.
It was nice on hot nights because they were having the air conditioning running like crazy. Yeah. But overall, it just never hit the level that it should have.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of that had to do with the brightness. I think a lot of it came down to maze design and where the scares were located and how scare actors had to approach guests. There were some cool things here and there, but overall,
like the body in the ice.
Yeah, there's some body in the ice. You'd walk over. They had
but easily missed though.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of the cool things were just minor additions.
Yeah.
Rather than a full-fledged scene or something that really made a difference.
Yeah, and when it got busy, like conga lining, it was just
horrid,
completely terrible.
It was really bad.
Yeah.
Is there? And we have calls in the back, and I see the calls in the back calling for the return of Infected and stuff like that. And we'll get to that in a little bit here. I was going to ask you something because I have always been, and I will always be team HHN Orlando over everything else, just because that event was like the holy grail to be able to get to go to. And then now to be in a spot to get to go to it, it's like it means that much more type of a thing. And to have gone to Hollywood since 2007, every year, 14 years consistently devoted to going to Hollywood, and to kind of see it devolve to what it is right now from what it was. Like I had told my wife, you know, my dad is going to Hollywood's HHN with me, like 70 years old. He's going to do it with me this year. And then after this year, like I'm fine not spending the money to do Hollywood to like put that towards going to Orlando. Like I'm okay with that. And that it is what it is. Like just because Orlando, having done gone to HHN 30 last year, like it's like, yes, it is that much better. Like I don't want to crap on either one, but yes, it is that much better.
Yeah, I mean, like with I feel like the thing with Orlando's Halloween Horror Nights is that it feels like a much more cohesive event. Like the thought process that's put into the scare zones and the mazes and literally every other little moving piece in that event feels much more thought out. I do think that they have a huge luxury in having space as well, because unfortunately Hollywood is in a situation where if they want to put stuff in that back lot, it's a working back lot, and the way the business works, they have to rent out that space. You know, they can't just take it, you know, because movies are filming there, TV's filming there, and stuff like that. So, you know, we are unfortunately in a situation where we don't have a lot of opportunities and spaces to put mazes.
That's not my critique.
I'm just saying
I want to turn because I have a different reason.
Moving on. Okay. What's your critique?
My thing is the freedom that they give the actors. I think Orlando gives much more freedom to their actors to have fun.
I think within the mazes specifically.
No, scare zones too.
I don't feel that way about the scare zones. I feel that way about the mazes.
We can disagree and you can let me talk.
Wait. Did I say it wrong?
I don't know.
I think I said it wrong. If
you're gonna disagree with me, then no.
I feel like the amount of freedom that they get in Orlando, it doesn't apply to the mazes, because I feel like the mazes are the exact same thing. It's the same style of scare. And it's not like they take the opportunity to come out and like follow somebody.
No,
it's
always In the mazes they are still pretty, you know, similar to Hollywood, where like this is your area to scare, you stay there. But in the scare zones is what I'm talking about, is where they give their actors more freedom to have fun, which gives it a much more like overall like energetic vibe, which is what I love about Knott's. So to me, Orlando feels a lot more similar to Knott's Berry Farm vibe, which is why I like it so much more. Because honestly, when I'm not in a maze at Hollywood, I'm bored, because the scare zones are so tiny and kind of just restricted.
Well, I mean, like the main entry scare zone, you're only going through that
when you get in. Yeah, there's no other reason.
And then maybe come back to go through to the Waterworld queue maze. Yeah. But other than that, there's no reason to go back all the way through. You know, and if you have the scare zone on the back lot, which is more like a gauntlet, you know, it's a choice. You don't have to go through it. You could skip it if you want to.
Yeah.
But on Crowded Nights, who would want to go through that, because it's all sardined?
Yeah, I don't want to go on another rant about Hollywood scare zones. I've done that too many times.
But in general, I do agree with you. I do think that there are particular actors that work at Hollywood who have a lot of fun.
And
feel that energy. I know. Yeah. I know. I'm just saying that there are particular actors that take advantage of that scare actor position and have a lot of fun, inject a lot of energy, inject a lot of freedom into their position because they can. And I think there's a lot of people that lean back on that position as like, okay, we're good here. I get the vibe. I'm just going to do what I need to do, as opposed to going above and beyond. But there are some scare actors at Hollywood that are just tremendously talented at what they do in those street zones.
The thing about the scare zones at HHN Orlando is they were very much like 50-50, because there were some scare zones where the scare actors were like up in your face, pretty like pretty close and in your face, like Seek and Destroy, the alien AI scare zone.
Yeah.
They had the it wasn't the Collector. God, what was his name? I don't remember.
The director?
No, it was like an AI name. And you,
I know who you're talking about. I don't remember his name. You
went to the screen.
Or their name.
There was like a live guy that was actually like interacting with you. It was a really cool scare zone. And those scare actors were up in your face. But then that scare zone directly led into the Crypt TV scare zone. And all of those scare actors were on stages and they never even got close to you.
Yeah.
So, and it was the same kind of deal where they had the Terror Queen scare zone.
Mm-hmm.
Those characters were like really big, so by design they didn't get that close to you. But yeah. that led into the Eddie like backlot, like picture, just like sets and different like genres and stuff.
Isn't it also where they had highlights from different scare zones from the past?
Yeah, and like it was scare zones / houses too.
Yeah,
and so like,
I think like Vamp 55 had like a.
They had like a stage.
Had a stage.
Okay.
Yeah. No. And then that they had a invasion stage.
Mm-hmm.
They had a like if you go way back to the when it was at Islands of Adventure, the Seuss area had like a foam scare zone, and these like cartoony looking guys had a scare would pop out of the foam. Those guys had a stage.
You know who they reminded me of? They reminded me of. What are they called? From Spy Kids, what the floofs?
Oh, the thumbs?
No, not the thumbs. Oh. The characters themselves, oh. Like the big grins. That's what those reminded me of.
Okay.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah.
Spy those Kids scare zone confirmed.
But like,
thumbs were terrifying.
On top of all those characters having stages, they had like a completely different cast of characters. That just kind of like roamed in between the stages, and those characters were right up in your face.
Yeah, that's so cool.
And then that at the beginning of the night each night was also a really cool spot because that's where like the Jack, James Keaton Jack, would go, and he would be with Eddie. So that's like in this whole HHN stuff, that's his brother. And for like the first 30 minutes, he would be like in the same area. And he would take pictures with whoever was there.
That's one of the big bummers. Like, we wanted to go so bad last year, and we just, out of safety, chose not to fly over and do anything because of the pandemic. And I wanted so bad to have a picture with Jack.
Yeah.
So bad. And I'm very nervous that he's not going to be back this year in any way, shape, or form. But I guess we'll have to wait and see.
We'll have fun regardless.
True. But I'm just going to cry the whole time. And be like, there's no Jack here.
So you're normal.
Yes. Probably. Yes. My normal demeanor. Just continue to cry. Just crying about different things,
just
really.
Crying.
On that speculation map, if we're taking into account that those guys are right a fair amount of the time when they say something, they're usually in at least the right area of what it actually ends up happening. Like they'll say Seaside Village and it'll be like New England Vampires or something like that. Like it'll be like really, really close. Right now, the one that seems like one of the bigger like names that is coming back was Stranger Things, but the rumor is Stranger Things may not come back. Hollywood wise, I thought the Stranger Things 2 maze was unforgivable.
Yeah, like it was a next level kind of
it was
bad.
Shocking.
In my written review, I really didn't hold back.
Yeah.
And it was shockingly bad.
Yeah. It didn't even feel done.
It wasn't finished. No, monster at the end, I forgot its name.
It wasn't the Demogorgon, no, it was the Mind Flayer.
Mind Flayer, yes. Yeah.
It was
totally
white.
Unpainted.
It was white.
Totally
yeah.
Unpainted. Yeah.
I can remember because we always, what we do, we don't really like film POVs, but what we do is we run the audio recorder on our phone. I'll just turn it on and I'll stick it like in my jacket pocket. And it's mainly just kind of muffled music and me screaming. And, and at the end, I'm usually, you know, with whoever I'm with. And then I'll ask the person, like, what do you think? Yada, yada. Get, like, that instant reaction. And do that, like, one or two times for maze over the course of wherever I'm at. Yada, yada. And always the HHNLA lens, you can hear my optimism at the beginning, and I get frustrated over the course of the evening. And then there's always like one HHNLA maze that really they do a really good job with. Like, and it's almost enough for you to forgive all the black hallways that they do every year.
Let me ask you this question then, and before we move on to this other scary farm stuff here, but let me ask you this. Would you agree that the HHN mazes that feel the best in terms of sets, costumes, music, sound design, literally everything from top to bottom, tend to be the original mazes? And when I say original mazes, I include the Universal Monsters in that.
I would say definitely the Universal Monsters one. The La Llorona mazes are definitely in there, so that's an original.
Yeah, because you have El Cucuy, La Llorona, Universal Monsters mazes. There's a good handful of original. Holidays in Hell, Holidays Pandora's in Box. Yeah. Whenever it seems like they go to something that isn't IP based, it feels like they're not put in a box, and they have fun with it. And we all know that Murdy absolutely loves Universal Monsters. He has such a love for them that I feel like that passion really, you could see it in each iteration of these mazes that's happened, from the first Universal Monsters maze to Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman to Bride of Frankenstein Lives, which is, oh my God, good. Like, this is what HHN mazes should be, good. To even the maze that just leaked, which is Universal Monsters Collide.
That's why I'm so excited for you to go to Orlando, man, because if you were happy with the maze, the Bride maze in L.A. last year, like, the one in Orlando would have made you cry.
I heard a lot of Orlando people say that theirs weren't as good.
Yeah, that's crazy to me.
That's
their
like the total grasses and greener.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah,
that because conversation happens a lot. Grass is greener, kind of situation.
Because, yeah, like, the Haunting of Hill House was the most like pleasantly surprising maze for LA for me last year. Like, the best scare in the entire HHN Hollywood event for me was that tall man in the mirror maze.
That scared the living shit out of me.
He got me really, really good. And then the difference, you know, in the LA tea room when she's got the poison tea and she's like trying to get you to take it. Yeah. You know how the lights flashed and all the ghosts were like in the walls?
Yeah.
Orlando's, it doesn't do that. Orlando, you see the mom with the poison tea and the little girl is like dead on the ground. And then you kind of round the corner and it goes into the scene with the brother's wife, pregnant belly. They have like the demon is inside of her pregnant belly. You go into that scene immediately. Ooh. So it was kind of interesting to see those two differences.
Yeah, I think the creative approaches to the different scenes, especially when it comes to IP mazes, is always really, really fascinating to me.
Yeah. Like our year, we it was The Shining on both coasts.
Oh, and my God.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, the difference.
Because I remember going through ours, I was like, that was fine.
Yeah.
It was good. And then we went through The Shining in Orlando and screaming, both of us, as we came out, we're like, why wasn't ours like that?
Yeah. Okay, so
what? What?
You went through both that year, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is like the heated debate, and it's usually between people that hadn't done it both in the same year. So the Jack Torrance character design, there's the LA where it was like the full mask, no actual like acting at all. It's just a mask with voiceover being blared over the sound system. And then the Orlando one was a dude who was acting, but he had like this like Frankenstein level bad costume bald cap looking thing. When you watch it on video, it does not look that good. So my question to you is, live there, did it look that bad in the moment? And then two, did it look worse than the dude in the mask enough that you actually preferred the LA one? Was the Orlando one way better?
Why are you putting me on this spot?
Well, I'm just letting you go first. Okay. I talk a lot.
I preferred the Orlando one because I like to see the like emotion the actor's face. Because that character and Jack Nicholson is just so iconic. Animated. Animated. Yeah. Well, and it's And so I forgave the bald cap and I preferred the one in Orlando.
Okay.
I think I would have to agree. I think the
100% track record. I thought you were just going to disagree with me.
No, I think I have to agree because I think when a character is getting in your face, their expression and their personalization in that moment makes so much more of an impact than it just being a mask. When you see the mask, you're like, it's a mask. Cool.
Yeah.
It looks like Jack Torrance. I like the consistency. Cool. Great. But there is a bigger impact with the person's face being there. I remember saying something like, well, that looked a little silly.
Yeah.
I do remember saying that. But for me, in the moment and going through and kind of being enveloped in the film and in the experience, it didn't detract from my enjoyment of that experience.
Yeah.
But I did audibly go, they look kind of silly.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Neither version is great.
Well, I mean, I think there's also a certain I think there's a certain level of suspending disbelief at a certain point that you have to do for mazes, especially when it comes to like recreating very famous IP.
Yeah, and a character that's going to be in several spots throughout the maze. It's it's hard.
Because even for me, like one of the visuals that that sticks to me to this day, like when I think about that maze, is near the end where he's yelling, Danny boy, and his face comes out of the wall and it's the actor, and I visually could still remember seeing the actor's eyes and what he was doing with his eyes and what he was doing with his mouth and all those things. So
it felt more real than a mask. Well,
not even just that, it's more visceral.
Yeah.
So does that to you make Knots that much better, the fact that they don't worry as much about that holding up to like an IP character? They just create their own characters, and that way it's just solely them acting something that they've created. So they don't have to be George Clooney. They don't have to be Jack Nicholson. They can just be a citizen of Ghost Town, or they can just be a killer clown in the boardwalk area. Like, kind of takes some pressure off, you'd think.
It definitely takes a lot of pressure off, but I also think that there's a certain other pressure that comes with that, because more often than not, they're tasked with creating their own character. Mm-hmm. And that kind of leads into the characters that we see in the ones that we know and love now, you know, like Death or the Bride or Otis or Gecko or any of those. And for people who don't know Scary Farm, each one of these characters, you know, mainly in Ghost Town, other scare zones they have it, but mainly in Ghost Town, these characters really do have names, and a lot of it comes from a haunt name, or the character's name is mixed with the haunt name, things like that. Uh-huh. Because I actually think the bride's name is technically Lilith.
Yeah,
I think but it's everyone Lilith, calls her but she's bride. Called the bride. Yeah. And Gecko is this goblin's type creature, like he just kind of like walks really low to the ground.
Yeah.
Otis almost looks like a gorilla, like S guy. He's like really big with a lot of hair. Death straight up looks like a skull with like black lines down his face.
Yeah.
A lot of those characters that you come to know and love, you know, come back year after year. And I think it's easy not having a Jack Torrance or, you know, a Jigsaw or anything like that there, where you have to characterize something that's been done in film. You know, these characters can be themselves, which is nice, but it's also nice coming back every year. It's something very warm and familiar to see them year after year after year.
Yeah, I do think it works in their benefit that there's no, like, pre-existing, you know, like...
preconceived notion.
No pre-existing bar that they have to, like, reach, you know, no one's going to be going into one of their mazes and be like, well, that's not what it looked like in the movie, you know?
That's not what Mesmer looks like.
Yeah. So it gives them a more creative freedom, but then, you know, it does give them more pressure too to create something without like this guideline you know, like, you know, like a movie, like, oh, let's do this scene and this scene and this scene. Like, yeah. They have to think about it all themselves. So it's harder in that aspect, but I think it also frees them up to be more creative.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Well put.
Well, thank you.
I think that not to Barry Farm, the way that you describe these characters, they are approaching a level of appreciation from like the true Scary Farm fans, of that of like Orlando's appreciation for Jack the Clown and, you know, all those characters. It's just kind of, I don't know. I don't know why Scary Farm, the footprint on social media, haunt community wise, especially on Twitter, is very much kind of like gatekeeped by HHN Orlando.
Yeah, yeah, I just think it's a bigger audience. You know, I think a bigger audience knows about Orlando than Scary Farm, and I think that has a lot to do with it. And I give a lot of props to their social media team too, because their social media team is really, really good at engaging the fans and making sure that, you know, they're being heard, or, you know, having fun and posting random silly crap. You know, the Orlando parks do a really good job at that. I don't feel like the parks here in California to do that kind of stuff.
No.
And I think they need to, because I actually think that would garner a lot of attention.
You know, it is interesting to see Murdy on Twitter now, because there was a time when he was pretty cool. Before he had like his personal Twitter so out there, he was a lot of fun on the HHN Twitter, like almost to the level of the Orlando.
Like a snarkiness.
Yeah. And he would like do like riddles, and he would do a bunch of shit. And I don't remember what it was that we solved, but it was some kind of like 5-step process that it began at Sunday at 9 a.m. our time, and he dropped the last clue to finish this like puzzle that revealed the next maze was Insidious or something. And we got it, and the prize was he followed you. And then whenever you had a question, he saw it more, like higher chance of him coming across it type of a thing, because he's following you. And so higher chance you're going to get your question answered. And like every year he like knew us by name. We would find him in the parks. He's a super cool guy.
Yeah. We've run into him a few times, and we've been lucky enough to have some backstage tours of mazes under construction and stuff like that, and I've had the opportunity to speak with him about, you know, the processes of going through the maze construction, especially living in Ireland.
Yeah,
you know, and the difficulties that kind of come along with those sorts of things. And he's very much an open book. You know, if he has the moment to talk, you know, and if you ask a question, he'll take the time to answer it. You know. Even the silly questions of like, was it cool meeting Alice Cooper or something like that? I'm sure he'll answer that. But I do know that he really appreciates like the more thought out questions about, you know, maze construction, maze design, you know, that sort of stuff. So
does not have that kind of a figure.
It did.
Who?
John Cook, I would say, for a while.
No.
For a little while.
No, I would disagree, because I think that
you love to disagree with.
I do.
You do.
But hear me out. Then tell me whether or not you agree with me after hearing this. For HHN Hollywood, John Murdy is the face. Like, he is the guy. Him and Chris Williams. Like, whenever you go to a panel for HHN at Midsummer Scream or any other thing, it's those two guys.
Yeah.
Only those two guys. Whenever you go to a Scary Farm anything, it's typically whatever designers have designed a maze or scares them that year.
Yeah.
And it's the whole team.
The whole team.
And it's presented by Jeff Tucker, typically, or somebody very particular. It's a whole team aspect as opposed to just like these one or two guys.
Yeah.
So for me, John Cook isn't that guy, because he's part of a gigantic team that helps put this stuff together. Yeah, he's the infected guy. Yeah, he's the deaths guy. But he's not...
He's the dark guy. I'm just saying.
But do you get what I'm saying?
He's the paranormal guy.
You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, but for a I'm few right. years. No, you are not. Okay, to answer your question, at Knott's, it ebbs and flows more. We don't have a Murdy. But for a few years, John Cook was the Murdy of Knott's.
Yeah, he was kind of like the golden child.
He was
like,
the golden child.
He was the person that people would go to all the time.
And now he's branched out. He's doing other things, and he's still, I think he's still like involved in Knott's marginally.
He's not involved in Knott's
not at all anymore. Okay, never mind. Ignore that. But
he's doing a lot of haunted hayride stuff. Haunted hayride and doing other small things.
But okay.
It's gotten much better.
Okay. No, okay. But so there was, but no, I'd say Knott's is other than the cook years, it's a group effort. It's
the
a group
cook
effort.
Years.
The cook years.
The private chat. There's some in the private chat calling John Cook the savior of Knott's Scary Farm.
I see.
I would definitely say that John really helped steer the ship during some very crucial years of Scary Farm's past, and pointed them in a direction that I think helped them land to where they are now. I definitely think he had a very large impact in the style in which Knott's is now approaching their bases.
Yeah.
A very, very large influence in that. Because I know that he even said that, you know, when he pitched Paranormal Inc., nobody thought it would be scary. Everybody thought that idea was a little bit silly. And he, you know, he basically pushed it through. And he's like, no, we should do this. You got to trust me on this. And I argue that Paranormal Inc. to even to the last year, its very last year, which was last year, was still the scariest maze at Scary Farm. I thought that it had that much impact on Scary Farm.
Mm-hmm.
It got purchased by another park, so it's going to be at another park for Halloween.
Yeah.
We're going to get something different, but you know, I think he had a very large impact, impact on Scary Farm.
Yeah.
You know, it is interesting because we have Great America about an hour and a half away from where we live, and that is a park that's owned by the same company that owns Knott's. So we got, like, at the local Halloween Haunt, like, the newest maze that has been installed, there's the Tooth Fairy maze. But now it is getting to the point where last year it was pretty run down, so I'll be curious to see wherever Paranormal Inc. lands, how many like good more years it can squeeze out. I bet it's got probably like 4 or 5 pretty decent years left.
Don't quote me, but I think Canada's Wonderland bought it.
Oh, okay.
I think I don't remember, but I think that's who bought it. Yeah, I mean, like, unfortunately, when these mazes go to other parks, you know, they've gone through 2, 3, 4 years of absolute abuse.
Yeah.
And then now they're going through another additional 2, 3 years of abuse.
In transit.
In transit. Yeah, in transit, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't doubt that Tooth Fairy was probably needed to be put out of its misery by the time it got to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. The worst event that I have ever been to at a corporate, like, theme park level continues to be consistently forever. The Six Flags Discovery Kingdom's Halloween Fright Fest. My God, man.
Well, so what's so bad about it is the question.
Okay.
Where do we start? It's
how
better.
How much time do we have?
It's easier to say what's not wrong.
The newest maze, the last time I went, was like a satanic, like church hospital type vibe of a maze on the outside of it. And it was the old elephant barn. So it was a really big building. And so the facade was like really big and actually kind of dope looking. And the music and everything was actually pretty cool. Black lights, you're getting excited, new maze. You went in, it was like one of those compression tunnels immediately. So you did the compression tunnel thing for probably 20 yards.
Oh my God.
And then you did probably, if I had to guess, another 20-ish yards of a room that was just wrought iron walls. And there was maybe, if you were lucky, because I did it like three times, because they gave us the fast passes for media. You go into this room twice. And so I did it a total of six times. And I want to say maybe one, maybe two of the times there was someone in that room.
So you did it five times too many.
And then there was maybe one good scare, and but yeah, it was total just disappointment. And all the characters really nonchalantly knew that it was a horrible event, and all of them were very unapologetic about being shitty about it. And it was just like a really bad vibe.
Oh, like, man.
That's not fun. That just makes the whole experience of being there that much less fun.
It is what I imagine being like a Cleveland Browns fan for a really long time was like. And going to those games and knowing your team was going to get their ass kicked, but you were still there.
Aww.
Watch them get their ass kicked.
So that you were talking about that Fright Fest event, I do think that we need to mention our Fright Fest at Six Flags. I think that it gets a bad rap more so than it deserves sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think that people aren't seeing some of the amazing things that are coming out of that event. I personally think that event needs to be hard ticket. I don't think they need to be doing this whole, you know, you could stay in and you get the whole scare zones and then you'd have to pay for the mazes. I think it needs to be a hard ticket event. And I think that would increase the quality of the experience of going to Fright Fest. But I digress from that topic because that's a whole nother thing. But I think what Scott Ramp and his Scream team is doing in terms of prosthetics and makeup for every single one of the scare zones is some of the best prosthetics in Southern California. And I'm saying that across the board. I'm saying better than Scary Farm, better than Queen Mary's stuff, better than Halloween Horror Nights. The prosthetics are absolutely stunning. You know, and the scare zones are very fun. They're imaginative, they're silly.
Scare zones are awesome. And they take risks. They do new things. They really try to like push the boundaries. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great. And
they test new things. Like remember Damned in Disguise, Change Before Your Eyes.
Yeah, it was like
scares that would change throughout the night.
It's like a masquerade ball.
Yeah,
I mean, it's super cool. They, you know, they always have like big props and like the clowns in their DC area.
Yeah,
just, like you can't beat them.
City Under Siege.
Like talk about icons. It's like those characters are more iconic than I think anything at Knott's. And like that's just my opinion. But you can
I think that's mainly just because Knott's doesn't.
Knott's doesn't try to do that.
They do not.
But
they are like, these are not icons. These are not the characters. Put them on a mug, but that's about it.
But those clowns are like so iconic, and it's amazing. Like I would go to Fright Fest, our Six Flags Fright Fest, and just stay in the scare zones and not do a single maze because their mazes.
The mazes aren't great. They're not great.
They close the door one year and then they open the door the next year and they say, look at a maze. They don't do anything. I don't bother with the mazes. But,
yeah, I mean, with the scare zones themselves, you know, I think there's a lot of thought and care put into the characters by the actors, as well as the prosthetics and literally across the board. And when it comes to the particular scare zones, there are iconic monsters from each one of the scare zones. Uh-huh. You have the clowns from City Under Siege. You have Innocence from Willoughby's Manor, Willoughby's Mansion, that scares it up there. I forgot. It's Hill something Hill.
Yeah.
I forgot off the top of my head. But there's a lot of those different characters that I think kind of get overlooked. And it's a real bummer because there's a lot of redeeming factors to those scares at Fright Fest. And I think sometimes the audience that tends to go to that event, which is a lot of kids, scares away haunters like us who appreciate those kinds of things. But
they have a slider show.
Oh my god, their slider show is so good, dude. Like I'm not even joking.
I go there
like,
just for the slider.
I went to Fright Fest multiple times just for the slider show. Like I worked the haunt, cleaned up and then went to Fright Fest just to see the slider show. Yeah. Like, that's how good it was. And I even went up to their creative director, and I was like, dude, this is so good. You need to expand on this. This is what is making you unique and amazing right now.
Do they still do it or no?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like last year was the...
They did it last year.
They did it last year, so yeah. I'm assuming they're going to do it again this year.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Your slider crew is so good. So good. Impressive.
I feel like this is the most excited we've been about anything we've talked about tonight. So it's good. You should go.
Well, and the thing is that, like, it's, you know, we have Decade Brigade and, you know, you have the Queen Mary slider crew and stuff like that. And they all do really amazing things.
But not at the event.
Yeah, just not at the event. And the one thing that they're doing also on top of that is they're doing physical comedy and choreography that isn't just solely based on sliding. There are other things going on in front of you that fill that time that isn't just filler. It's entertaining.
Yeah. Like,
it's really well done. Just to the music, the beats, and everything. It's just, I could not rave about it more.
Yeah.
You know, we've done it plenty.
Yeah.
It sounds like an awesome time. Well, man, you guys, again, always...
Tricks.
A great time, and always just like a plethora of knowledge of haunt knowledge. It's always fun to talk with you guys. Down the line, we will definitely have to do a prediction of what's going to be the best of the haunt season once everything gets announced again, because it's definitely going to be interesting. That whole first week one for Universal Hollywood with the Universal Monsters, that one's probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the first move for Orlando actually ends up officially being. So,
I'm pumped. I'm absolutely pumped. And when it comes to this particular time of the year, it's always so exciting. Yep. It's almost like the feeling that you have as a kid, like Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Going to bed. Yeah. It's like, it's that feeling because you're like, oh my God, it's going to happen. It's here. It's here. It's, we're getting the news.
For sure.
So pumped.
For sure. And it's definitely a fun time to be following all the good theme park and haunt coverage podcasts and vloggers. I'm telling you, Theme Park Duo, they do a good job of, it's always fun too when you guys kind of like both enjoy something, but you disagree on a certain aspect.
Often.
People love hearing us argue. I'll tell you that. People have messaged us and like, whenever Nikki's sassy and you guys disagree, best episode ever.
The arguments that like totally stall out too. They're like, that what? Say it.
It happens quite often, but it's
fun.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, man, thank you guys for being part of the event for us and helping us raise awareness about Haunters Against Hate. And it's always a blast talking theme park and haunts with you. So everybody check out Theme Park Duo, Twitter, and all social media outlets and podcast. However you're listening to podcasts as well, you can search Theme Park Duo and catch their podcast as well. Thank you guys very much. And we will do it again soon.
Yes, thank you so much. Yeah. We always appreciate jumping onto these things and love spitting out the knowledge or just talking the dorky talk when it comes to haunts, Scary Farm, whatever it may be. So we appreciate you asking us on. Always have a blast chatting with you and just loving the season of spooky.
Yeah.
So
cool.